Imposter syndrome is a real thing. A recent discovery as of only 40 years ago by Pauline Rose Clance and Suzanne Imes, the phenomenon is characterized by the feeling that our successes can be attributed to mere luck rather than our own skills and qualifications. It's stated that over 70% of individuals will feel an imposter syndrome situation at least once in their lives, and no one truly knows where it's triggered from. But it's clear that it definitely occurs during some transitional period in your life, such as a new career promotion, having a post that may go viral, getting into the school of your dreams, or even family or societal situations, such as COVID-19 right now. Another thing that's real is self-sabotage, and unfortunately most high achievers that do feel feelings of imposter syndrome could create more obstacles for themselves due to feelings of self-doubt and constantly berating their own performance based on pretty much everything. Welcome to In Muted Generations, and in this episode my guest and I will be discussing the topic of imposter syndrome and how to get through it. Hello everyone, my name is Ryan Mew, welcome to Unmuted Generations, and in each episode we focus on expanding our horizons and personal knowledge of the world to cultivate a happy and healthy lifestyle. My guest this week is Phyllis Jiroji, a product manager at Redfin, an imposter syndrome connoisseur, and a mentor for first-generation low-income individuals and women of color. How's it going today, Phyllis?
I'm doing well, how are you?
I am doing well. First of all, thank you for coming on, I really appreciate it. And second of all, for those who don't know, I think we connected mid last year, which is kind of crazy to think now that it's already 2021 in that aspect. And, you know, I think we connected because we kept seeing each other's content on LinkedIn. I saw your involvement with Product Buds. I think during that time, it was one of those things where a lot of people were trying to create engaging content because a lot of us had like nothing to do in that aspect. Like we were all trying to advance our careers, spread a message, but it's really hard to do that when you don't have that human to human interaction. So what made you want to start developing content more on LinkedIn and kind of be more active on that platform in the first place?
Probably, I don't know. It's kind of just like everyone claims that it's the thing you need to do for yourself, for your career, for your communication skills, for your networking. So if something's good in all aspects, I don't see a reason to not do it. So yeah, it's like if everyone told you that, I don't know, eating carrots is the way to go, and then you just see everyone around you eating carrots and they're all benefiting from it, it would be, personally for me, it would be a mistake to not also be eating some carrots. So if people are talking about how LinkedIn is a good content platform to post on and how much they've gotten out of posting content on LinkedIn, I'm not going to make the mistake of abstaining from that.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially with the carrot analogy. I'm going to have to use that one in the future. But I guess what I was trying to say was that I know a lot more people, they're generating content based on jobs. You know, I'm looking for a job here, help me out, somebody check my resume, pass it around, bump here and there. Mm-hmm. And with you, you create very organic content that relates a lot to your personal journey and different an array of really different topics. So what inspired you to kind of be more open about that on LinkedIn? Like, is it something you're just very passionate about, or was there a situation that made you want to expose the niche a little more?
I'm just the type of person that I can't do anything. Like, it's really hard for me to be fake. It's incredibly hard for me to be fake. Just in day-to-day life, online, wherever it is. So if I'm going to post something, I'm just going to post something that I want to talk about and I'm genuinely interested in, and LinkedIn is no different. Like, I do the same thing on all other social media platforms I'm on. And yeah, like my content creation on LinkedIn, like, yeah, it's tailored to being professional, but it's the same vibe as my social media anywhere. Like, it's very me, very niche, very day-to-day life, very I don't really care what other people are posting. I'm going to talk about this thing, and usually that has the positive effect of people being like, wow, like I'm glad you posted about this because X, Y, and Z. So yeah, it's just as a person, I'm very uncomfortable pretending to be something that I'm not. And if I think about imposter syndrome a lot, why would I then go on LinkedIn and pretend that I don't have it?
That's really good, because I know there are a lot of not necessarily fake people on LinkedIn. I mean, there could be bots, obviously.
Oh, there's plenty of fake people on LinkedIn.
I'm not sure if you heard about, there's a podcast called Declassified College, and mm-hmm. one of my buddies on there who actually runs it, he posted a LinkedIn post where I guess some person posted like, oh, it's still the middle of the pandemic and I don't have a job yet, which is like, you know, one of those inspiring posts. But there were people who literally like copied and pasted it. And then they just put like, follow my profile for more, just to get like more followers. And I guess the way the algorithm worked, it picked up on it and it put it at like the top of every feed. So they were almost like right next to each other. And it was like the weirdest thing ever. It's unfortunate how the platform, you know, sometimes contains like fake and genuine content like that.
Yeah, I mean, every platform does. LinkedIn is no different.
That's true. But I feel like a lot of people also, like you were saying, I think some people don't necessarily think I need to have a Facebook or I need to have an Instagram. A lot of people definitely don't think I need to have a Twitter, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think with LinkedIn, some people think this is essentially my online portfolio and I do need to have it and I do need to establish a presence.
Yeah. I mean, I'd argue that people do think those things. I think if you expand need beyond, like, think about models. Models don't care about having a LinkedIn. They care about having an Instagram. So there are people who do think that they need other social media platforms, and they do the exact same thing that you see people doing on LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I actually didn't think about that, especially nowadays, like influencers and stuff like that. Like they make the most of their money off of different sponsorships on Instagram. So kudos to you. You were saying that like one of the topics you think a lot about is like imposter syndrome. I know we all kind of go through it in that aspect, but what type of personal experiences did you go through to make you kind of write about it a little more and be open about your journey?
Well, recently I've started writing about it more because it comes up way too often for me to not say something about it. Literally, COVID and imposter syndrome are like the top two topics of my recent conversations. So I don't like talking about COVID, but I do like talking about imposter syndrome. But yeah, in terms of personal experience with it, it's kind of like, it's too large of an umbrella term, which is really frustrating because then people's personal experiences are very different. But at the end of the day, like, it's just, you know, doubting yourself despite the fact that you have evidence to the contrary. And I just, for me, the way that it's manifested is not applying to things, not thinking that I'm qualified to do certain things, and then so I don't volunteer to do them only to find out that the person who actually ends up doing them is less qualified than I was and I just was doubting myself. Or even just like thinking, just being anxious. I think for me the biggest thing is just like I'm constantly anxious because I feel like I have to do so much more to be okay, and then I have to be reassured that my current performance is fine. So I'll say that's the strongest thing. For other people it looks a little different. For some people, it might be like not a constant sense of anxiety. It's just like I'll put myself in things and then be anxious when I'm there. And then for other people, it might just be abstaining from certain activities altogether. So, for example, let's say posting on LinkedIn, for example, like I can post on LinkedIn and think that I have to make my post like so much better and like I have to improve how I post and how I engage. And then someone else's version of imposter syndrome will just be not posting at all. So it looks different for different people, but that's because it's too large of an umbrella term. And I want there to be more specificities around it. And I'm still thinking about the terms that I want to create to be more specific about the different experiences of it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. There's even a statistic out there that says like 70% of individuals go through an imposter situation somewhere in their lives. I think it's kind of one of those things where it leads for creative burnout for me, because it's like I always want to dabble in new things. Like I consider myself kind of like a free thinker in the aspect of like if there's something I want to try out, like I don't know, trying to learn how to mix music and DJ, I'm just gonna like jump into it. But then I'll compare myself to like people who've had years of experience, you know, above me or have nicer gear per se. And then I'm like, okay, well now I don't necessarily want to do it. Like I can't see how I'm being creative. It's really tough in that aspect. And I think for me, it stems from, I know you were saying yours is like anxiousness. Mine's is like just being more of a perfectionist, you know, And also just being kind of one of those people where, you know, I guess among my family and friends, I'm looked upon as being more of like a, you know, like, hey, Ryan is the guy who may have his life together in some aspect. It all comes down to putting too much pressure on myself. And that's what causes imposter syndrome for me, because I don't want to let anybody down. And at the same time, my standards for myself are just way too high.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say, like, for me, the thing that's helped me the most is just doing things badly, poorly on purpose. If you try to do things well, you'll probably always be stuck in like a procrastination, perfectionism box. But if you just do things poorly, then it doesn't matter how good you're doing them. Like, so for example, I make art and I've been doing bad art on purpose. And like, same thing with when I struggled with writing in high school, I used to have like really strong writer's block. So then I'd just write bad things on purpose. Like, not bad things as in like bad words, but like, yeah. Just like poorly written articles or papers on purpose. Because, I mean, knowing myself, and you know, if you really are a perfectionist, you're not going to let it stay bad. You're going to fix it once it's there. But now you've given yourself a position to start from instead of like always putting it off and never doing it because you feel like you can't get it right from the beginning.
Do you think it's also just trying to de-emphasize it a little and not prioritize or care about it as much? Because I know sometimes, like, when I'm writing stuff on LinkedIn, sometimes I'll overly think about it because I want, like, similar to you, I want to get the most genuine message out. I want it to impact plenty of people's lives, but it gets hard because I'm like, oh, it needs to be perfect. Like, it needs to invoke this emotion. And eventually, like, instead of, you know, potentially doing it poorly, it's just saying, hey, you know, it's good as it is. I'm just going to put it out into the world, whether people click on it, whether it goes viral. Like, I don't care. Like, I just want to put that good intention out into the world.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just put it out there.
Yeah. Do you think that imposter syndrome is kind of growing in our society? Because I always think back to, like, you know, maybe like the 1950s when social media wasn't necessarily like a big thing at all, where I guess the only people you were comparing yourself to was like Billy in the neighborhood. It's not like you were able to reach people across the world or anything. Like, I can't go into somebody's calendar in 1950 and reach them at all.
Yeah, no, it's, have you heard of the term vertical expansion of reference group?
No.
Yeah, so that's exactly what that is. It's just like, because of social media, we're not just comparing ourselves to the people next to us in class. We're now comparing ourselves to random people on different continents on social media. And because of that, like, it can make you a lot more insecure because if you're comparing yourself to the person you're next to in class, it's like, oh, you're in the same class, you have the same teacher. Like, maybe they're a little better than you, but you're generally in the same like life situation and you know a little bit more about them. So your comparison is not going to be as wild as it will be if you're like comparing yourself to Kylie Jenner, who you know nothing about and who has like so much more money and resources than you do. And yet you're still comparing yourself to her. So yeah, just like the vertical expansion of your reference group, where like before your reference group was just this small cluster of people nearby in your life. And now your reference group is literally all human beings.
Yeah, I know. It's really tough, especially when you're comparing to Kylie Jenner, who's a billionaire. And it's not just her. I mean, there's plenty of other people out there. I mean, there was a kid by the name of Benjamin Kicks. He's like this 18-year-old kid who collects very retro sneakers and he sells them to celebrities and rappers because, you know, they'll pay for some of the fanciest stuff. And when you compare your success to them, you just feel like you don't even match up. Like, it shouldn't even be a comparison. Do you think that eventually our society is going to have kind of like a technological blackout where we're just going to say, hey, this is enough social media? Or do you think we're just going to keep using it over time and hopefully these problems will subside?
I just want it to shift personally. I can't predict what's going to happen because the world is an unpredictable place, but
yeah,
I personally would want, like, when I imagine social media in my head, I, like, for example, one of the things that I don't want to say I want to work on because then that puts me in the category of people who say they're going to work on something and never do. But an idea that I have, that I am not committing to in any way is a social media site entirely dedicated to failure and like just rethinking. I think the most important thing will not be abstaining from social media, just rethinking it. It's like instead of posting about how perfect your life is, just like post about it, the realities of your life. And that ends up being a lot more relatable. And I mean, I've seen it on LinkedIn too. Like there was one day I went on LinkedIn and I was like actually shocked because all the posts I was seeing was about people trying to take care of their mental health and how they have not been doing well recently. And so that's definitely a shift from like all posts about flexing about all your accomplishments. But then that's also partially like curation. I don't follow people on LinkedIn who are just going to flex the entire time. So I can't speak for the other corners of the internet, but my corner of the internet is getting a lot better about talking about failure more openly. So I'm just imagining that social media will just become a place where the world will just become a place where we're just tired of being stressed and insecure and comparing ourselves to people all the time. I don't think that will go away entirely because there are people who really just enjoy living that kind of lifestyle and will continue to do so. But even think about things like, for example, like Alicia Keys not wearing makeup and like how more people are leaning into body positivity and like not wearing makeup and like talking about mental health and stuff. So I think, you know, people just get tired of pretending to be something that they're not. And hopefully that continues.
No, that's honestly such a great idea. I mean, I think it's so amazing and such a beautiful thing that people are just more open nowadays about their journey and their own personal failures and obstacles they faced along the way. And I kind of think of it as kind of when you go to university and there's like a big wall or maybe a piece of paper where it asks a question and you could write out your answer, but you could write it anonymously. Like that'd be such a good thing. I think the only thing you'd need to watch out for is people or I guess trying to, you know, bring too much negativity in the world per se and bring more attention seeking, woe is me type of situations.
What do you mean?
I would just say that some people thrive off of having the victim mentality and kind of taking sympathy from individuals and using it as kind of like a band-aid for their insecurities. I mean, I think that first of all, everybody's pain threshold and is their own maximum in a way. But at the same time, you know, there are people who could sometimes be over dramatic about failure because they want to just have attention and want to feel like people are there for them in a way. And some problems that they may be over dramatic about, you know, you could be over dramatic about getting a low test score. But how does that compare to a situation where you're a restaurant owner and you potentially lose your entire business because of this pandemic? Like, I understand, like I said before, that all failures are pretty much the same and it's applicable and uniquely to each individual. But at the same time, where do you draw the line for failure? Because I think in some aspect, like failure is one of those things where it should be more looked upon more with like a grain of salt and more beneficial towards growth, as opposed to just saying like, here's all like the negativity into the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on how you talk about it. Like if you talk about it and you're like, oh, like, you know, I learned from this or I'm improving from this, then that's very different from this sucks. And that's the end of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just hard because relating it back to imposter syndrome, I think a lot of people feel like they're fakers. And if they fail something, they feel fake in some aspect, like their achievements don't necessarily measure up to it. Mm-hmm. Or they aren't necessarily making the most of their lives in any way. At least with me, the way I deal with issues is I try to set like the highest expectation and just put that out into the world. Because my whole thing is like, if I could reach that level, at least I'm reaching for the stars per se. Like I'm trying my best, but if it doesn't work out, I mean, the clouds are just as good. What do you think of the fake it till you make it mentality though? And how some people kind of manifest the idea that they're already at the stars, even though they really aren't.
I mean, I think is it possible? Yes. Is it a good idea? No. Someone commented on one of my LinkedIn posts and was like, yeah, fake it till you make it. And I'm like, that's exactly what I'm not saying. I'm completely advocating for you to not fake it until you make it, because that is exactly the whole premise of imposter syndrome is that you're afraid of being a fraud. And now you're telling me that you're faking it on purpose to try and overcome that feeling. That doesn't make sense at all. Like, don't fake anything. Like, just ask for help and know that you're going to grow. Like, I do not advocate for faking it in any regard. I think if you mean faking confidence, like, I don't know, maybe that's a little different, but I don't know. Fake it till you make it is such a weird term to me, because it's like, what are we faking? Like, are you like giving a fraudulent resume? Is this a fake diploma? Like, what exactly is the part that you're faking? If you mean you're just faking confidence, then it's like, you can still do things without feeling confident about them. So that means you didn't have to fake anything. You could have just done the thing regardless of the fact that you weren't feeling too good about it. So I'm not the type of person to say fake it till you make it, because that's just dangerous territory that for me creates more problems than it does solve anything.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the same page as you. I think you should, I think being real is like the biggest proponent that any employer or just any genuine relationship you craft is something that people would like to see. I guess just in terms of like fake it until you make it though, like just drawing the line, like if I were to play devil's advocate, if it's something like the guy says he knows, I don't know, a query language and he's only like beginner intermediate and he's like, oh, once I get this job, I'll learn everything, all the insides outs and stuff like that. Like, I'm sure there's plenty of people that do that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what part of that is fake? Like, you're a beginner level. That's the truth. Like, you really are beginner level and you're willing to grow into it. I mean, because then it's like, by fake it till you make it, you mean lying about how good you are, or just being honest and being like, hey, like, I'm a beginner level, but I'm willing to grow into it. All the jobs that I've had, if they've asked me about something I don't know, I tell them I don't know it, but I am willing to learn it. And like, for example, there's this woman who hired me to be her accent reduction coach. Like, she has like a strong accent and she's like a government professional and like wants to get it better at presenting in a more like American dialect. And I was like, I've never done that before in my life. I don't know how to do that, but I can learn how to do that by the time we meet in 2 weeks. And she was like, cool. And she still hired me. So like, I'm just not the type of person to pretend that, to lie, just lying. If I was like, oh yeah, like I totally know how to do that. I was just upfront and honest. Like, I don't know how to do that now, but I will learn it and I will be competent enough to coach you in it in 2 weeks if you give me that period of time. And she was like, that's a deal. So I'm sure there are people who would have just lied, but I'm not one of those people. So
no, I'm really glad that you're being honest and genuine with it. Like, I know with me at least, like I wouldn't say I was ever a fake it till you make it person. I mean, I'm sure we've all had situations and we've kind of learned from our mistakes. Just say like, oh, I faked it this time and I felt horrible after, or it didn't work out for me. For me personally, whenever I see somebody faking something, like they're putting words on their experience or they're showing all their certifications that may not necessarily be applicable to them, and they just click through a bunch of slides to get it, like it never works out in the end. Because it's like, people are smarter than that. They'll ask a question and stuff like that and they'll say, this doesn't work. And I think for you, I mean, you've had a vast array of jobs, and like, for example, this accent reduction coach. I mean, that's a pretty unique position. And I think it also requires like a decent amount of like self-belief to just know like, hey, I could figure this out, you know, like where does that stem from?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, it was partially her. Like, she just wanted, like, if someone presents you with an opportunity and they want you to be their coach, you're like, I guess I'll figure it out. Cause what am I supposed to do? Just like say no, send her away. It would be different if like I saw a posting somewhere for an accent reduction coach and I was like, oh, I'm gonna get this. But it's like someone came to me and asked me to do it, so I was like, so it becomes like this social pressure to like get it together because someone expects it of you. But also just like, I've posted about this before, like growth mindset is literally the only actual counter to imposter syndrome. Like, it's the only thing that actually fixes anything if you just believe that you're gonna grow and like figure it out and learn, because at the end of the day, like, everyone learned how to do what they're doing now. There's no accent reduction coach that left their mother's womb being an accent reduction. Yeah. So if any one of those people can learn how to do it, I can learn how to do it. There's nothing, I have a mind, and I have a mind that can learn, and that's really all that matters. I think it would be different. I really feel like people think that like mental limitations are the same as physical. Like, for example, being a star NBA player, like you probably should be a certain height. You might be able to get yourself really good at shooting that you're like, you can be a little shorter, but you definitely can't be like 4'1" in the NBA. And I feel like people treat the entirety of life as if it's the NBA. They're like, oh, like I can't possibly do this thing because I'm not like X, Y, or Z. And it's like, it's not the NBA. You don't need to be 7'1". You can grow into learning whatever it is. Like, you cannot learn to be a different height, unfortunately. You are the height that you are. But there's a lot of things that you can learn in terms of skills. And I feel like people really act like they're just stuck in their certain skill set, knowing damn well that nothing that they know now, they need, how do you do before? Like, how do I use a computer? I didn't know how to do that when I was 5, and I figured it out. So yeah. Why is it that you like feel like you can't learn how to do anything else? It's the same brain.
Yeah, I mean, we're all pretty much just, I mean, obviously, like, I would like to say there could be societal aspects sometimes. Like, you could be born into a better situation where you do have, you know, that access or availability compared to somebody who may not, maybe who's living in like a third world country who may not have access. But I mean, I always compare it to like the David, are you familiar with David Goggins? So David Goggins is basically a Navy SEAL, but he's also the author of a book called Can't Hurt Me. And basically his origin story is he's like this guy who grew up in New York. He grew up in a very abusive family. And then he moved over to Indiana, where he experienced racism for the first time because he was like a black person in a society where there wasn't a lot of black people. And, you know, the world was a lot different back then. So with him, all of the odds were kind of stacked against him. And at one point he was like a 200-pound dude just spraying for cockroaches. And he realized while he was doing that job, like, I need to make a life change. Like, I want to be a Navy SEAL because those guys are so disciplined. They could conquer anything in the world. Like, and they're also fighting for our country. So he decided, I need to lose all this weight. And he's done many feats since then. He lost like literally like over 100 pounds in a month to get down to that Navy SEAL, I guess, weight. He's also done like 3 hell weeks. And then he wrote the fantastic book, and he's run a ton of ultra marathons since then, where he's basically running like 100 miles in the span of 24 to 48 hours. So it's pretty ridiculous. But his whole point of his book, and why I think it resonates with this conversation, is pretty much because all of the odds were stacked against him. He didn't necessarily have any of the resources available to, you know, hypothetically achieve success in life. But his thing was like, my main strength isn't that I'm the super athlete or the super freak, but it's that there are barriers in my mind. And instead of treating them as barriers, I treat them pretty much as calluses, and calluses that essentially make me stronger. And he's able to get over that mental hump every single time. And supposedly, in his words, take souls to be able to you know, grow and get to the next level every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mental challenges are definitely so hard because you have to get out of your own way. You're really the person stopping you from what you could possibly do. And that's a really hard place to be in. But once you get out of it, it's pretty good.
Was there a situation in your life that, you know, I guess you kind of, because with him, his was just like, I sprayed cockroaches and I was just like absolutely done with it. For me personally, it was like, I wasn't necessarily a good student in high school. And I'm like, I need to make like a turning point in my life, going into college. And I guess just for the rest of my life to be more focused on my own personal goals and meeting my own career ambitions that I wanted to set myself up to do. Like, did you have a turning point in your life in some aspect?
Like a turning point that led to...
Just more of like your self-belief. And because I think sometimes when you're saying, you know, we're all born with the same brain, we could essentially get over the hump. I think a lot of people know that, but a lot of people don't necessarily think like that unless they've had the experience of personally getting over a hump.
Yeah, I mean, one, we're not all born with the same brain. What I meant was you have the same mind that allowed you to learn anything you've learned so far, so you can learn something else. I don't think there's equivalencies across people, but within your own head, you have the same head. So you can do something else. I actually had that conversation with my manager literally yesterday. He was like, there are things that you can do now that you couldn't do when you first started this job. So whatever you think is hard now, remember that you learn how to do a lot of things in the past 6 months, and you'll learn how to do a lot of things in the next 6 months. So he basically told me, like, if you can keep in mind that you were able to learn how to do those things, then you should have a lot of faith in your ability to learn how to do the things you're struggling with now. So that's what I meant. But in terms of, like, I don't know, points in which I just decided to have a different self-belief, I think for me it was kind of just like, I think there's a lot of different points. But I would say, I don't know, I think that just, like, there's the undercurrent of, like, what's the other option? The other option is what? I give up on myself. I just opt out of life. I decide not to do anything. And it's like, why would I pick that? So as a result, like, I'll always prefer to go for the option where it's like, I have to believe in myself, because if I don't, I'm just voluntarily opting into a life that's like lackluster as compared to what it could be, and the only person whose fault that would be is my own.
Yeah, and we only live one of these, so I mean, it's one of those things where you got to make the most of it, even during this time. Like, I think out of the majority of people I've seen or connected with on LinkedIn, you've definitely made the most of this whole pandemic situation, you know, just developing content, product buzz. You got, like, a new job, obviously, in the middle of the pandemic. Like, has this pandemic really helped? How has it helped you, as opposed to just talking about, like, all the negatives?
I guess working remotely is so convenient in so many different ways. It's also helped me in the fact that, like, this is like a really evil thing to say, but, like, now I'm kind of on the same playing field as other people. And what I mean by that is, I took a growth year and I was, you know, in Kenya, very far away from everyone else, and couldn't see people, and, you know, just did not. I was just on a different continent, so I couldn't interact in the same ways that other people who all lived in the same city or in the same area were interacting. And now it's kind of like, oh, nobody can really interact with anybody, and we all have to interact virtually. I feel like it's kind of brought people into the world that I've been living in for a whole year, where it's like I have to resort to video calls and, like, talking to people asynchronously and all of this other stuff, because I just lived so far away for so long. But I like that. I like the fact that it's like, oh, like, before it kind of felt like my friends would be like, oh, I'm so busy with all this stuff that's going on in my life, like, I can't really talk to you, I'm so sorry about that. And now it's kind of like, if at the end of the day I have to FaceTime all of my friends anyway, I guess I'll talk to Phyllis. Yeah. I was like, oh, I don't want to FaceTime a friend. I'd rather just hang out. So then they just, like, default to the people who are conveniently around them. So I think that level of intentionality that I've always been practicing, the fact that other people now get to practice it and, like, meet me where I'm at is really nice. And then also working remotely is really nice, because then I can, like, I don't know, go for a walk in the middle of work, or just, like, do random stuff that I couldn't do if we were in office.
Yeah. And plus, you don't need to, you can dress in your pajamas or whatever. I know the big thing for me was kind of similar to you is birthdays, as weird as it sounds over the pandemic. People normally spend birthdays with their family or friends, and they may go up to, you know, a nightclub at night or a brunch or just anything to celebrate in person, and they get gifts. And the pandemic made it really tricky this year. And that's when I was telling my friend, as weird as it sounds, because her birthday just passed, but this is kind of a blessing in disguise, because you know who your real friends are. I remember on my birthday last year, when that was, like, when the pandemic really just first hit and the lockdowns stayed in place. And I remember I had so many people visit me with, like, different cakes and stuff, and I had friends calling me. Like, in a way, it was a little more genuine, and I had more fun just seeing how much people would put the extra effort in to make a connection, as opposed to just leaving it at that and just showing up.
Yeah, definitely. The level of intentionality is pretty nice. Yeah, it's been interesting to see who I still talk to / who I don't still talk to. And it's been surprising because there's definitely people I didn't think I was going to keep talking to who I'm still talking to. And I'm like, interesting. And there's definitely people who I thought I would still be talking to who I'm not talking to. So that's also interesting.
I think with me, I'm kind of the same way. I think I went through a time perfectly in this pandemic where I was like, who are like my real friends? You know, who's my inner circle? Who's my middle circle? And who's my outer circle? And it got a little tough because there would be some people who I know are like in my inner circle still. Like I'd still be there for them and talk with them no matter what. But I don't try to like quantify how much I talk with them because you know, over the pandemic, they may be going through a lot, you know, like his family may be restaurant owners and they may be suffering and they may not want to go talk. So it's a tricky situation, but I hope it passed and I hope our world will eventually adapt in that aspect. It doesn't necessarily look very good right now in California, to say the least, but, you know, it'll probably get better as the years go on or we'll get used to it.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess one last question I'd have is just, you know, what are your plans, I guess, for the future? Like, what are the main priorities and goals you have heading into 2021 and years after that?
Yeah, I really want to start a business. I want a business. That's it. I want a business. I want to get my body together. I like hate exercising. I have this conversation literally every day. Like, I just hate exercising. I truly hate it. So my goal is to figure out how to not hate it as much.
Yeah.
And then my goal is to also start a business.
That's cool. I mean, I think one of the things I've been saying is like just the young entrepreneur in general. We have so much more time to think of new like business ideas and like, hey, there's a need for this in the world. Not necessarily to like make a profit and stuff, but hey, we could do this. We could do this now. We have like all the spare time. And with exercising, that's like the number one thing over the pandemic that I don't think is being emphasized enough. Like, I think some people are talking about or relying on the vaccine coming to them before they get their physical body in shape and stuff like that. And I've just been trying to take vitamins and exercise daily. I mean, it sucks. Similar to you, like whether it's like weight training or I guess just going on walks and stuff like that and runs and for extended periods of time. Are you still taking like different vitamins or like supplements or something like that to assist with the exercise?
I mean, one, I don't exercise. I'm trying to figure out how to exercise. So that's like one thing. And yeah, no, I'm definitely not taking anything, I guess, to help with the exercise that I'm not doing.
Have you tried like yoga out and stuff like that?
Yeah, I just hate all of it. Like, I really just hate all of it. I don't know how to explain it. I just don't like physical activity. Okay, that's a lie. I like physical activity, but not workouts. And I think those are two very different things. And like, given the fact that physical activity is not a normal part of life anymore, if you're in the same place and like can't leave and interact in different places across the world or in your city or whatever, that means that physical activity ends up being a workout, and I don't like working out. So
yeah, I think the two biggest things for me is like just like the time I'm cool with working out. Like, I know some people are like morning advocates and they're like, oh, I get up at 6 a.m. an hour before I should to like pump some iron, and that's like not my cup of tea at all. I'm a night person personally, so I like to work out at like 7 or 8 o'clock at night and going into like 10 o'clock. And I think the other thing is just kind of trying to find something you like. Some people are really big with like weight training. Some people are big with like yoga. And I think there's like so many different ways to work out. I think there comes a time where people don't necessarily like ever enjoy it, but it just becomes like, okay, I could take it for the day. You know, like it's just a part of my routine. I hate it, but it'll help me in the long run.
Yeah, I'm trying to get into the I hate it, but it'll help me in the long run mentality, but it's not working out so far.
I'm sure you will. I mean, I think you're a very hardworking person, and I know you're definitely not the it's going to happen in one day, flip a switch type of person. Like, I'm really excited to see like where your hard work goes into, where your fitness journey goes, if you decide to open a business, and just really everything in the future. So I would just like to thank you for coming on again. I really, really appreciate it. I'm going to put all of your links in the description below in case anybody wants to follow up with you after this or follow your LinkedIn for your genuine messages about imposter syndrome or just anything, you know, just helpful advice and the tidbits that you provide. So thank you for that.
Thanks for having me.
And for everybody who happens to be listening, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed this topic about imposter syndrome. I hope you guys enjoyed Phyllis and a little bit of her story. And if you guys enjoyed this episode, please make sure to leave a rating or review. It really helps me out and it really supports the podcast. So I thank you in advance for that. And then finally, if you guys enjoyed this episode and want to listen more, feel free to visit unmutedgenerations.com or search Unmuted Generations and subscribe to the podcast to get new episodes in your feed weekly. As always, I ask you, how far are you willing to expand the horizons of your thinking and actively seek out discomfort to create a happy and healthy life for yourself? Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you guys later.